This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and today I'm quite thrilled to be joined by award-winning sportscaster, host of CBC Sports, and now author, Andy Petrillo. Mm-hmm. She's here to tell us all about her book, and her book is wonderful, everyone. And I recommend that you also listen to it on Audible because it's in her voice and it's great. The book is called Just Call Me Andy, Sports Stories from a Trailblazer. And she really is a trailblazer in this country and beyond. Before we get into the book, let me tell you a little bit more about Andy. Andy Petrillo is an award-winning sports broadcaster, and in 2016, she became the first woman in Canada to win the Canadian Screen Award for Best Sports Host. Congratulations. And she's gone on to win this award multiple times. In 2022, she became the first woman to be recognized by Sports Media Canada in the Outstanding Sportscaster category. Andy continues to present major sporting events for CBC Sports, such as the Olympics and World Championships. She's a mainstay of Canadian hockey and soccer coverage and currently hosts shows for Prime Hockey and One Soccer. As an award-winning sportscaster, Andy's career has spanned over two decades. Currently, Petrillo hosts CBC Sports, where she covers and shares the stories of high-performance athletes on the network's weekend show CBC Sports Presents. And throughout her career, Petrillo has achieved many firsts for women in sports broadcasting in Canada. It's quite inspirational. She's helped pave the way for younger female broadcasters to build their own careers in the industry. And Andy Petrillo can be seen on major sports broadcasting events, as just mentioned, CBC Sports coverage of the World Championships, the Olympic Games. Most recently, she's become the lead host for CBC's broadcast of the Professional Women's Hockey League, PWHL. Petrillo also shares her extensive soccer knowledge on the digital platform One Soccer. She's the lead host for the men's and women's national teams, the Canadian Championship Tournament, and the Canadian Premier League. Andy grew up playing a variety of sports. In the book, she describes herself as a tomboy. And I have to say that I really admire people who turn their passion into their purpose. And Andy has turned her passion really into a spectacular career. Over the years, Petrillo has become one of the premier voices in Canada for hockey, soccer, and the Olympics. Pretty impressive stuff. Petrillo grew up in Maple, Ontario, the only child of Italian immigrants, Eva and Joe. She currently lives in Toronto, Ontario, with her husband, John, and her two dogs, who we just heard, Pepper and Ginger. Andy Petrillo, congratulations on all of this and on your book, Just Call Me Andy, Sports Stories from a Trailblazer, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much.
There's a lot, but you deserve it. I could have gone on and on for another five pages. I really could.
Oh, man. Well, when I hear that, it is wonderful, but it also tells me I need a vacation.
Totally, right? Totally. I really loved your book. And I'm going to be so upfront. I wasn't going to say this. I'm not a big sports person, but it's made me want to get into sports. I started getting feisty and getting excited about it. I'm a former Montrealer, so it brought back a lot of memories. And I also love the audio recording in your own voice. So well done, really.
Thank
wonderful.
You.
It made you feel like you were part of it all, like you were right there at times in it, you know, and that was fabulous. I also really enjoyed when you talked about your start at Rogers Cable York Region at 19 till age 22 and cutting your teeth on everything, of course, including sports. I related so much to this because I also got my start at Rogers Cable 10. And I also was a celebrity dining critic at Toronto Tonight Magazine covering performing arts. So I had a lot to say about that as well. And
you would go
with your camera crew and eat at three restaurants a day. And you would always eat at the first restaurant because how much can you eat? And then because they were getting paid and you were still an intern, you got to bring home the food and the leftovers. Mm-hmm. And I love the story about how you began noticing that your dad was gobbling up the Wednesday food, especially the gorgeous rack of lamb for dinner that night. So you really did cut your teeth working and volunteering at Rogers. What are your memories of that time doing that job because you did it all. Mm. You were the restaurant reporter. You did lifestyles. You did entertainment. Yeah. And ultimately, you asked to do sports for York Region Rogers. And it's too bad they don't have that these days, because that was the best training, right?
I lament that all the time. Whenever I go and speak to schools and, you know, kids are always asking, what can I do to get more experience and cut my teeth? I can't help but have just a moment of sadness saying, you know, I would have told you to go to the cable stations because that's where you could make your mistakes as well.
Yes.
And they expected you to make your mistakes because you were learning there and that was okay. And now, unfortunately, it's you kind of have to hit the ground running and you don't have that time to develop and also just figure out who you are as a broadcaster, because you're almost expected to be perfect right out of the gate. And I think that can hurt your confidence very early on. But my memories there were just exceptional because I didn't quite know what direction I was going to go into yet. And I could dip my toe in everything. And there was an understanding that I wasn't going to be perfect. And I met incredible people who were very supportive. And we were like this really, some of my best friends, two of my very close friends are who I met at Rogers Cable.
Wow.
And, you know, I share the story of the woman who was the lead anchor, Jennifer Buchanan. She's my best friend to this day, who first gave me my chance to be put on camera as well. And so, yeah, you create these bonds and I really wish those existed, because even when I was in school, we had to do an internship. A lot of people in broadcast journalism have to do those, get your 100 hours or whatever it is now.
Yes.
And there was an opportunity to put your name into this lottery to go to TSN, Sportsnet. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have been cool, but I do remember even my professor saying, as wonderful as that is, you really want to get the Rogers Cable one, go in there, because you'll be able to actually touch a camera. You'll be able to actually edit or maybe even do a stand-up. Whereas if you go to TSN and Sportsnet, you'll observe, which is great, and you'll be in this incredible atmosphere, but you truly are fetching coffee.
Yeah.
And that was exactly the experience when I was in college and we had to do that internship. Everyone who did get the TSN or Sportsnet came back and said, oh, it was great. I met this person and that person, but I did nothing. Meanwhile, I already had a demo tape.
Totally.
Because of being at Rogers Cable. So it was wonderful.
And as you say in the book, that first demo reel that you created was 7 minutes long and you quickly learned that it has to be a minute 30 to two, right? Because seven is like a feature film, right?
Oh my goodness, it was. It was a documentary. It was hilarious. And, you know, I was like, okay, you're going to have to trim that down big time.
Yeah. I loved reading that. And it was also very poignant to read that you were just 14 when you shadowed a reporter for the first time. And as you write, at 45, I now have young reporters shadowing me. And time flies when you're having fun. Could that have been Libby Znaimer, who of course is a host and VP of this station and of Zoomer Media, and Laura DeBattista, who was at City for 25 years? Were those the two women that you were shadowing at age 14?
Yeah.
What are your memories of shadowing these women and what did you learn from them?
Oh my goodness. So the first time was with Laura DeBattista. My mother actually worked in politics for many years and Laura was the beat reporter on the political scene. So my mom just said, listen, I know she's young, but my daughter's already interested in this. Can she just shadow you for a day? And she said, yes. And I just remember her going out. There was this fearlessness and doing these interviews and a confidence. And I just went, oh my goodness, like, how do you just walk up to somebody and start drilling them with these questions? Because you need answers. Like, you're doing a pretty important story. And I just remember thinking she was the coolest thing that I had ever seen in like so long. And then the process of editing it and everything. So it was really great to just see how she went out and put a story together. And Libby was the same thing. The way we went out and the way she took command of a story. And it started with in the newsroom, making the phone calls, setting up the interviews, going out, getting them done, watching her just nail her stand up, come back, the editing process of that. And then what was really cool is I think when I had shadowed Libby, I got to stay for the 6 o'clock news with Anna Wachowski, and Gord Martineau.
Oh.
And I just went, what is happening here? Because you remember, they were so ahead of their time. They didn't have a desk. They moved around the newsroom and they kept moving. And then they came near me and I went, oh my goodness, like what's happening here? And it was so eye-opening and really inspiring. And I pretty much knew from that point on, I'm like, oh yes, this is the industry I'm getting into.
This is what I want to do. And you later interviewed Gordon Martineau. Isn't that the case? That must have been such a full circle moment.
It was just a few years ago. Yeah, I was at the time just filling in on breakfast television and having a blast. And then I said, well, who are our guests today? And they said, Gordon Martineau. And I almost fell off my chair. I said, pardon? So I told him my story. I said, when I was 14, 15, like, this is what happened. And his eyes just lit up like saucers because he wanted to reminisce. He knew they were revolutionary in what they were doing and everything as well. And I just couldn't believe I was staring at him like right in front of me. And I just said, I don't think you understand how cool this moment is for me.
That is very cool. That is the best. What does it feel like to be able to offer that up to young women now who are looking up to you as their inspirational mentor and role model? That must be very satisfying.
It's crazy. I mean, I do have to take a beat. Like, even most recently, we had the Canadian Screen Awards and I was presenting awards. And then afterwards, you mix and mingle. And I had a lot of people come up to me saying, my daughter was watching you. You know, it was always my daughter loves you or my daughter this or my niece that or something. And I just, it still doesn't hit me because I guess I'm still in the throes of it. Like, I'm still in the hustle. I'm in the trenches still. And it's nice when people do say that because it gives me a moment to step back and go, huh, I have been doing this for a while. And as much as it's gratifying to me and I just see this as like something that I do in my life, I am, you know, inspiring, I guess, and influencing and just encouraging others, you know, especially young women to get into it. So yeah, you have this moment of like, okay, you know, this
that's
is
cool.
Worth it.
Yeah. Really it feels good. It feels so good. I was also so struck, Andy, by the story of how when your parents asked you if you wanted a brother or sister, you said you wanted a puppy, you wanted a dog, which of course was Lola. And that, I think, began, or maybe it was even earlier, your lifelong love affair with dogs. Can you tell us about Lola? Because Lola sounds like Lola was a big part of your life and your family and everything.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. I was just saying even before we went on here, because she passed away on June 1st, 2014, just before I was getting set to even host the FIFA World Cup at that time. It's still like really difficult to talk about her because to your point, I've always loved animals since I was really young. And you're right. My parents, you want a brother, sister? I would have been 3 or 4 at the time. And I kept saying puppy. And then as I got older, I said, wait a second. Not only did I not get a brother, not only did I not get a sister, because yes, I'm an only child, I said, I didn't get a dog either. And so finally my parents caved. And for my sweet 16, well, there are my current dogs. For my sweet 16, they said, all right, we're going to go and get a dog. Wow. And we did. And we got Lola and she passed away just over the age of 18. Wow. So she was with me through pivotal years, my teenage years into my 20s. When I moved out and was on my own, she was my roomie. Wow. Yeah, she was there through me getting into the industry, heartbreaks of the industry, triumphs in the industry, heartbreaks of relationships, and to finally finding my husband. Like, she was there through everything.
It's brutal. It's brutal. You know, I was thinking back when I was a producer on the Shirley Show on CTV for many years, and we did a show called When Your Loved One Who's a Pet Dies, and we got about 400, 500 calls. They had to get a new dedicated line at CTV because it blew up in the switchboard, literally. And, you know, pets, right? That beloved pets are part of your family. And there's the unconditional, it's just everything, right?
That's what it is, right? And I think they've actually done now some scientific studies as to why it hurts so much when a pet passes, because there's that unconditional but non-judgmental love for so long. Like, they're actually proving that there is like a scientific reaction now in your body that just create such a devastation in you. But, you know, now I've got Pepper and Ginger, my spice girl.
That's fabulous. Again, I want to point out the fact that you're an only child. My late father was also an only child, and he became a member of the Order of Canada in 2002. And I always knew that only children are pretty remarkable. And now research is supporting this idea that only children often enjoy unique advantages. They thrive psychologically, intellectually, and socially. Many develop high levels of confidence and achievement, leading to academic excellence, self-esteem, and independence. How would you describe your childhood and the benefits of being an only child? Because they're actually saying there's something pretty cool about being an only child.
Yeah, based on that description, I knew it. I told you so. Because Of course, when everyone hears I'm an only child, the first thing they say is, oh, you were spoiled. That's always the first reaction of everybody. Oh, you were spoiled. And yeah, I guess my answer is yes, but because, you know, there was just the one child that my parents focused on. And then something I talk about in the book, when I'm an only child, you know, and I get into this obviously in the sports world, being a woman in still a very male dominated world, the lines of femininity and masculinity were very blurred in my household.
Yes.
Because my parents showered me, they just had the one child, with the same kind of love. And then my responsibilities or how they treated me was very much, you know, there wasn't a son that could be treated separately from a daughter, so to say, right?
You got the whole gamut.
I got the whole gamut. What you would typically describe to be, well, these are masculine duties. These are masculine traits. I still got those, right? Because I'm just the only child. And then what would be considered feminine duties or feminine traits, I got those too, because I was the only child. So those lines were very much blurred in my household. It wasn't, you can't do this because you're a girl, or you have to do this because you're a boy. It's, here's life, live it.
Live it. That's great. That's so great. You also kind of became famous at the age of five. Now that story about it's an amazing story. Everyone get the book. Just call me Andy. It's really great. But the story about you being left on the bus and that bus driver going off to drink, and your Nona eventually got that bus driver fired. This would never happen today. But what I found interesting, and I love to hear it in your own words, but is that you kind of just let it roll off your back. Like when people have asked you in other interviews, you know, what was that like? And did it scar you? Not really. You sort of, and you became famous on the first day of school because everyone was coming up to you and saying, oh my God, tell us what happened when you were left alone on that bus. Because that snotty nose Rocky was his name.
Rocky. My goodness.
Yeah.
I was so excited for my first day of school. And little did I know that the bus that was carrying us, we were all supposed to get off at the school. So when Rocky decided to be like the snot-nosed Rocky that, you know, I learned that he was, he's like, this isn't your school. You have to stay on the bus. Well, what do I know? So I stayed on the bus. And I was at the back of the bus driver, which nowadays, to your point, that wouldn't happen because bus drivers cannot exit the bus. This is what I've learned. They cannot exit the bus without walking to the back, pushing a button because that forces them to look between all the seats. Well, back then, I mean, we're talking, what is this? 1985. They didn't do that, you know? So she just like, so when she parked the bus and I realized that we were not at a school, we were at some like strip plaza, I went, excuse me, you know, what about me? And she nearly jumped out of her skin because I scared her. She had no clue there was still a kid in the bus. But her response was, too bad. You were supposed to get off. So too bad. I'm on my break now. And I was like, so she left me in there. And I remember I cried and cried myself to sleep because I know I slept because I was startled when she came running back into the bus.
Wow.
Because at that point, what was going on at the school was when my grandmother came to like spy on me a little bit to see how I was doing in the schoolyard. She couldn't see me. She couldn't find me.
She just about had it. Yeah. She went out of fit. Where's my little darling?
Yeah. So they called the police. And the police got involved, and I guess they figured out how to track her down. This is before cell phones and beepers and everything, but I guess they kind of knew her local watering hole as well. This is all stuff I learned later. I had no clue as a kid that this was going on. But yeah, that's kind of, you know, unfortunately, she did have this addiction, which caused her to leave a child in the bus. When she got the phone call from the cops, she scrambled pretty quickly into that bus and drove me back. And the police officer scooped me up in his arms, very dramatic, to walk me into the school, you know, and it was quite the entrance for me. So yeah, my first day of school, I got carried in by a police officer.
That's a good way to start. Yeah. I also read, and I was fascinated, that your family would always watch 60 Minutes and The Fifth Estate. And so you actually really thought about becoming an investigative journalist and took it seriously, but they also love to watch sports. And you said you've also loved sports from a very early age. And you write about wanting to combine your love of sports with your love of storytelling. But when did you realize that broadcasting might allow you to do both and to realize sports is the thing?
Yeah, it was a pivotal moment actually when I was at Rogers Cable. There's a couple things. I mean, I used to have to do this radio hit. I also took radio in college. And Jeff Howitt, who was the director at Chum 1050 for a long time. He was my professor. So yeah, we had some really good teachers, university and college. I was pretty fortunate. And every week we had to do this 1 minute hit, and it was news, weather, traffic, and sports.
Wow.
So he had said to me one time, he just stopped the recording. He said, you know, your voice completely changes when you do sports. Like, I can just feel it coming through. Yeah. I said, well, I love sports. I play sports. I just, you know, it's everything that I do. And he's like, well, why don't you try getting into that? And at the time I was still volunteering at Rogers Cable. And this 1 week in particular, I had covered a murder, a suicide, and a lacrosse game. And I went, I think I know where I want to be.
Yeah, totally.
What brings me joy, and what was also just like, and that's why I just have so much respect for news reporters, and obviously the reporters who do the long form storytelling that really like dive deep into the shadows of humanity and what they can bring to the forefront, because there's a lot they see and a lot they learn that can really bring you down. But I chose to go into sports, and I just knew that I could still tell these incredible stories of perseverance and overcoming, whether it's injuries or hardships. A lot of athletes overcome poverty where they can't afford certain equipment to even do their sport, or certain camps that they can go to, or coaches, and just communities coming together to help them. And, you know, these are still very lovely stories that I get to share. And I learned that you can do that through sport. So I love being able to do that too.
You know, what's so interesting is Jeff kind of, it's like, I'm a life coach, and he saw that your eyes lit up like a Christmas tree when you talked about sports.
Yeah.
So that was such great noticing and observing on his part, and how great that he imparted that to you. That's really amazing. We're going to go on a short commercial break. And when we come back, we're going to talk about how you also loved performing as a young girl. Be right back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. I'm Judy Liebrack, and I'm here with Andy Petrillo. And Andy, you also love performing and even played one of the three narrators in Little Shop of Horrors. And what are your memories of that? What a great show.
Well, so here's the thing. Unfortunately, I turned it down, but I loved performing. And what happened was I was Joseph in Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat.
Oh, wow. Wow.
I know.
That's a good one.
Oh, my goodness. In our elementary school production, because I love singing, dancing. I took dance for so many years. And it was the drama teacher from the high school, because we performed in front of the high school as well, who said, I want to offer you one of the three narrators in Little Shop of Horrors. We have the production next year. You're going to be in grade 9, first year of high school, and I want you to be a part of it. And I went, yes. And then, of course, high school starts, and little did I know, basketball tryouts were right out of the gate. And I had to make a decision, because I made the team, basketball or drama. And unfortunately, Miss Augustinik was not very pleased with me when I said, I want to go in. I'd rather be playing basketball.
Yeah.
So
but you knew what your passion was. It's really, really amazing. So I also love in the book, and I think this speaks to why you're so successful, is that you say yes to a lot of things. You're a make it happen kind of person. And so how many early jobs and opportunities you said yes to, and one of them is Rogers York Region. And I love that. And I love how when you first talked to the station manager at the time, Lisa McLean Stelic, and she wanted you as her sports host, but was met with some pushback by some of the executives who were concerned about having two women, can you imagine, at the desk for the nightly newscast, as the main news host was Jennifer Buchanan, who you've talked about. And McLean Stelic prevailed, and you became in 2004 the sports host and producer for York Region. And you covered all these sports, Foundation Hockey, where you hosted a weekly live Junior A hockey broadcast. Was that fun doing that at Rogers at that time? That must have been a real trip.
Oh my goodness. That was a ton of fun. Anytime you get to be on location, even till this day in my profession, when you get to be on location anywhere. We used to go to the rink. We used to do our shows live from there. It was so awesome to feel the vibe and all the fans would come out. And it's amazing whenever people see cameras too.
They're so excited.
It just makes it feel bigger than life. Oh my goodness. Great. We had so much fun doing those broadcasts. Driving home on a very scary winter night though. That was also part of the experience, but the cold rink, hot chocolate, just basically kind of slumming it. But I loved it. That's part of the story of rising through the ranks.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You write about receiving some valuable advice when you're working at Rogers from Michael Landsberg. What did he teach you?
Okay. Well, he was the first one to actually say that 7-minute demo tape needs to go down, to a minute 30. Like, oh my goodness. But he also, one time he had said to me, like, you have to learn to be uninsultable. There's so many lessons that Michael Landsberg gave me, but he's like, learn to be uninsultable.
Wow.
I said, what does that even mean? He goes, you'll figure it out. And by the way, this was also pre-social media blowing up.
Wow.
So he's like, you'll figure out a way how to protect yourself. In many ways is what he said to me. You'll figure out a way how to protect yourself, your sanity, and also just how to have faith in the work you're doing. He's like, understand not everyone's going to like you. You're not everyone's cup of tea, but that's okay. So just learn to be uninsultable.
Cool. You also had the opportunity to be in an infomercial making $2,000, I read, and you were advised not to do it because you were going to become a famous sportscaster, which they almost knew you were, and you didn't want that infomercial to Mr. Ho or what was
it? It was Dr. Ho, and that was Michael as well, because at that point, Michael was mentoring me. He was looking at my demos anytime I had a question, because I was still at Rogers Cable at the time, and he had brought me on Off the Record, which was such a big deal. I was such a celebrity being on Off the Record, and thanks to Michael. But so I get this call saying you can be in an infomercial and $2,000. So this would have been like 2004 or 2005. Wow. And I had fresh out of school too. So, I was very fortunate. My parents helped me with my schooling, but at the end of the day, like I was buying a hot dog and water for $1.25.
Well, I love that story in the book. I love that.
You know what I mean? Like, so when somebody's like, here, you can make $2,000, I'm thinking I'm rich. So I call Michael and I said, here's my opportunity. And I thought he was going to be so happy for me. And he went, don't do it. Doing that. Yeah. Because he explained the difference between infomercial and commercial. He goes, a commercial has an expiration date. An infomercial can live forever. And he goes, I have faith that you're going to make it in this industry. Yeah. He goes, and can you imagine if you're hosting, obviously I've turned out to like host Olympics and then you throw to a commercial and there you are, a Ho girl. And I said, oh no. I want to say Dr. Ho was he's an incredible man. Yes. He was so kind. I met him. He was lovely. Yes. But I saw where Michael was coming from and I went,
sage advice. Yeah. Well, then things really started kicking off in 2006. You joined Leafs TV, owned by Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, MLSE. You served as a reporter for broadcasts of games featuring the National Hockey League's Toronto Maple Leafs and their American Hockey League affiliate, the Toronto Marlies. With ESPN, you had the opportunity to do freelance work such as sideline reporting for the 2008 National Lacrosse League Championship game. Then your role expanded even more under MLSE, and you began working with other TV stations, NBA TV Canada, GOL TV Canada, which was an American TV sports channel dedicated to soccer, as host and reporter for the Toronto Raptors and Toronto FC football games. Like, this is like, what did you ever just sort of say, pinch me? I know you've had a million pinch me moments, what is going on here? But that must have been, things were kicking off. Was that exciting? Yeah.
Oh, I'll always be grateful to MLSE for giving me that opportunity. But that goes back to something you said earlier about not being afraid to say yes. And that I remember my boss at the time at MLSE when I was just doing Leafs TV, Chris Hebb. It was the off season and, he took me out for lunch and said, listen, we're thinking of expanding a little bit more of our Raptors coverage. And we're bringing in like Toronto FC. It was the new team. They launched in 2007. So he's like, we're going to obviously expand our soccer coverage too. What would you say if we wanted you to be a part of that? And I went, okay, Yeah, why not? Sure. And at the time, there was someone else working for the station who apparently he had asked the same question to, and they had said no, that they strictly do hockey. And then they ended up letting that person go because they were looking for someone who could be a face of those three entities that they were bringing on board at MLSE. So the fact that I said yes, and I know that this is something, again, we've heard this, I'm not new in bringing this up. A lot of women have that imposter syndrome of they don't want to say yes because they think, well, wait a second, I don't know as much about that sport as I know about this one. So maybe I should say no because maybe I'm not right for that gig. You can call me arrogant. I don't care.
Right.
I turned around and said, nah, I'll figure it out. Like,
I'll figure it out. There's some very fun sports stories in the book, everyone. Also, in 2010, you traveled to Haiti on behalf of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, MLSE, to deliver supplies after the earthquake. And you went to Afghanistan along with some former NHL players and the Stanley Cup to help lift the morale of the soldiers. Such a great story. And I love of how when you were there, you almost lost the Stanley Cup ring in Afghanistan and how you found it in a pile of camera equipment and how you were so cash and chill about it as if nothing ever happened. But you must have almost had a heart attack. Can you tell us what happened? Because, oh my God.
Oh, I thought my soul left my body. Like I was floating. Like, oh no. You know, when you just have that extreme anxiety in your chest that you detach from your body. That's how I felt it. It was the Calgary Flames Stanley Cup ring. And I mean, that trip to Afghanistan to see what our men and women do for us to fight for our freedoms and safety is like, just, it is still so mind blowing. And the appreciation I have will forever be there. But it was quite the grueling trip. Because we were trying to visit as many bases as possible.
Yes.
And then we had to rush back and change because we were also there to play ball hockey. I was doing the commentating, the former players, NHL players were doing the playing against fellow military. So I'm holding on to Colin Patterson's Calgary Flames ring because I thought it was cool.
Yes.
And when I dumped all my stuff to quickly change, because now, you know, such a time constraint, he went, all right, I'm going to need that ring. And I went, oh yeah, what? Oh, and I just didn't know when it fell off. That was the other thing. You're tracing your steps going, did it fall off when we got here? Or did it fall off when we were in the desert visiting the snipers? Like, I don't know.
My God.
I have no clue. But yes, there it was in the pile of my clothes that I had just dumped because it fell off my hand. And you bet I played it cool. I didn't even let anybody know that I died 5 minutes ago and just came back to life. I was like, here you go. I even cleaned it for you. Here you go.
Smart cookie. You're a smart cookie. Andy, your career is full of some very heady stuff. I can't imagine. And this, I get the chills when I say this even. What it was like when you joined Hockey Night in Canada for the 2011-12 NHL season, hosting the iDesk portion of the broadcast and really becoming the first female ever to serve on a full-time basis with the Hockey Night in Canada studio team. But I want to go back for a minute. What was it like when you received that call offering you the position of landing the Hockey Night in Canada iDesk hosting job after years of working your way up through local TV, Leafs TV, MLSE broadcast? When you found out you're about to become the first woman ever to serve as full member of the Hockey Night in Canada Street team, I can't imagine what that was like. Can you describe where you were, what happened, how you felt when you heard that beyond life-changing and exciting news?
Oh my goodness. You know, it's so funny because when I tell people that was the best and worst day of my life, they always go, huh? So at the time, my grandfather had been in the hospital for a while. My grandparents on my mom's side, my dad's parents, I wasn't as close with because they stayed in Italy. They lived in Italy.
Right.
Whereas my mom's parents came to Canada and, you know, they helped raise me. I was very close to them. And, you know, so my grandfather, we were in the hospital. We were always visiting him. We were playing cards. And as one does, whether you play scoba, briscola, and I get the call from the time I was working with an agent and I get the call and I had gone through auditions at this point. And he's like, they're making an offer. Like you're getting it. And I just turned to my grandfather. And when he started to understand what was happening, he got choked up because again, hockey is what made my family feel Canadian. When they first immigrated here, my grandfather, you know, would always just work hard to get whatever jobs he could. And this one job he got, he was working in the sewers and he was working with these Irish guys who were always talking about this sport of hockey and the Toronto Maple Leafs. So my grandfather's like, what is this? What are you talking about? So they enlightened him and he saved up, scrounged up his money and bought a TV. And every Saturday night, they watched Hockey Night in Canada. And when my grandfather, and I turned to him and I said, no, that's the show I'm going to be on. He's like, wait, is like what? Like, that's the show you're going to be? I said, that's the show I'm going to be on. And like, you know, the whole room erupted. My parents were there. My aunts and uncles were there. So it was just such a beautiful moment where it's like, wait, the show that made us feel Canadian is now the show you're going to be on. I said, yeah, that's it. So it was so, I mean, that was the best part of the day. That was so special.
Wow. And your mom evidently said seeing or like her daughter join the iconic broadcast felt like a dream come true for the entire family. And your dad was especially emotional about it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's funny, right? The men are very stoic, but there's been moments in my life, my career, where my dad's gotten very teary-eyed. And that for sure was one of them. Because even for him, my mom came here when she was 3. So my parents met in Canada. My dad came here when he was 17.
Wow, so he had
that same experience. So whereas my mom had it when she was younger, here's hockey, and I kind of watch this and feel Canadian. My dad, when he was 17 and he came to Canada, then got introduced as well to hockey. And it was through Saturday night and, you know, what is this? And the Toronto Maple Leafs and everything. And now it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now your daughter is going to be on it.
Oh my God. You've given your parents a lot of joy and your grandparents as well. It's really, really. Do you remember stepping into the studio for that first broadcast? Don't answer that just yet. We're going to go on a short commercial break and more with Andy Petrillo when we come back. Be right back. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We are back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio. I'm Judy Liebrack. And before the break, Andy, you were just about to tell us what it was like stepping into the studio for that first Hockey Night in Canada broadcast.
Everything is so surreal. I mean, I think more than anything, I remember just meeting Ron McLean and Don Cherry for the first time.
Oh my God.
Going, oh, you're real, right? Because everyone's like just on a TV screen up until they're all one dimensional.
Yes.
Right? Until you meet them and you go, oh, you're real. You're five dimensional, right? And they were so kind right out of the gate. The studio was larger than life in my eyes. I was like, oh my goodness, I've never been a part of a studio this big. And it was very overwhelming. Without a doubt, it was overwhelming because it's real. Like, it's not just the studio being big, it's the crew, the massive crew in the control room. You have a massive crew in the studio. And I'm like, oh, this is what. Like, it's going from the minors to the big leagues. I'm like, this is what the big leagues is all about. So I remember being very overwhelmed, but credit to everyone who worked there who tried to make me feel as comfortable as possible.
Did your whole wardrobe, and I know we also have a makeup artist in common, Nancy Crosby's an old dear friend of mine, and Jean, her late mom, I was very, very close to. But did you have a whole new wardrobe, beauty? This is like the big time, right? This is,
oh my goodness,
intense. Like, what was that like?
Well, I remember I wore the same clothes that I had been wearing essentially on digital, like, you know, Leafs TV was a digital channel, even like Raptors, NBA TV, Canada, as you mentioned, Gold TV, all very digital. So, and then anytime I did stuff sideline, because for a while I worked sideline, even for Sportsnet covering Major League Soccer, it was sideline. So, you know, you just had a nice blouse and slacks, whatever. I never really did the studio wardrobe well.
Wow.
And I walked in there with the same clothes I had been wearing before. And everyone's like, no, honey. Like, this isn't high school. We need to elevate your style, and we need to work on your hair, and we need to do a better, it was a makeover. It really, really is. And you see the transformation, like you see where you go from, oh, I think this is what I'm supposed to look like, to no, this is now your polished look. Right. So it was a bit of a rude awakening where I went, well, what's wrong with this outfit? Like, no.
That's not going to do it.
That's a no.
You're a very down to earth gal. But was it fun to be glammed up a little bit, even though I know you're just a very natural type at heart?
Oh yeah. I mean, it is fun. Till this day, like, it is still fun, right? Yeah. To have someone else do my hair and makeup and you get it all done up and everything. But that's probably 10% of me, like 90%.
I know.
Never the makeup, and you'll always catch me in a hoodie. That's pretty much my look. So when it's so funny, because when the athletes see me, I mean, they're always so used to seeing me on TV or when I'm interviewing them during a show.
Right.
So if I run into them casually, they never recognize me. They're like, who is this child coming to say, well, when you're not wearing makeup, you often
that's
like also
so
just look
great.
Younger. And they're like, who is this fangirl child? And I'm like, oh, hey.
I love this story in the book. You're reminding me, when you're saying no makeup, of your first day at TSN. You show up at 6 in the morning for your call, and there's no makeup artist, and there's no makeup because you're not this girl that walks around like, see, it had been me. I have my makeup in my trunk and my purse. But you're like, you don't have your makeup. And thank God some female crew member happened to have a lip gloss and a mascara and put it on you. I mean, do you remember that? Thank God you're pretty.
Yes.
You can get away with it. But my goodness. And from then on, you said you always carry in the trunk of your car a makeup kit, blazer, right?
And heels.
Yeah.
I do now. That traumatized me because I had also worked very late the night before. I had, at the time I was with the NHL Network, and you always have to stay for when the West Coast games are done. So I don't think I got off the air till like 1:32. And for TSN, the Premier League games, because they're in England, they're early because of the time change.
Right.
So I'm already on very limited sleep. I already look like I got hit by a tow truck. And I come on in, I'm like, it's okay. The makeup artist is going to fix me. And they went, whoops, we messed up the scheduling. So the makeup artist actually won't be in until after we're already on the air. And I just told the director, I said, there will be no singles. There will be no close-ups. Yeah. Like, it is wide shots,
establishing shots all the way.
The analyst, and that's it.
Yeah.
And yes, Samantha was our camera operator. And I just remember her coming to me and like opening her bag going, I don't know, is there anything I have in there? And I managed to grab a mascara and a lip gloss from her, and that was it. And
good
I went,
Lord.
Oh, Lord.
That's hilarious. Well, it took off from there. That was the turning point. And really after that, your career soared, gathering momentum with every stride. You anchored CBC's coverage of the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi, Russia, the 2014 FIFA Cup we were talking about earlier. What a banner year. My goodness. And what was it like that first time anchoring the 2014 Winter Olympics? Is there a moment that still gives you the goosies these days when you think about it?
Oh, I mean, it was even just arriving there and seeing all the setup and all these people from other countries. It truly was this incredible coming together of the world. And as media members, we have our, you know, jackets and we have our gear that we have as well. And it's not Team Canada gear, but it's pretty obvious that you're from Canada. Like, your gear always looks like the country you come from. It's always red, and we have the maple leaf. And it's the same with media from all the other countries. It's very obvious where they're from.
Wow.
So it was just this incredible experience where, you know, I'm going into the studio one day, and I think it was only like the second day of competition, and Mark McMorris was competing. They had just brought in snowboard slopestyle. He was coming in as this big name. Everyone knew it. On the international stage, everyone knew who was the superstar in that sport. And as I was getting ready to go onto the media bus to take me to the studio, like, everyone's yelling out, good luck, Canada, good luck, looking at me, because they knew it was going to be a big day for us.
Wow.
And it just gave me goosebumps, the camaraderie that when you're at the Olympics as well is so special. And that stands out to me every time we do a games. Yes. Just how the world truly does come together. And there really is a celebration, right? Like when your country does well, other countries do congratulate you. They come up to you like as if you're part of the team and everything. So it's just, it is such an incredible experience.
It's just such heady stuff. And then, okay, I love this in the book. And you have to read it because there's many more things. I don't want to give it all away, but 2014 FIFA World Cup. I love in the forehead when one of the Canada's most respected sports broadcasters, who's been the face of TSN and TSN's hockey coverage, James Duthie, wrote this in the forward to book. And I have to read this to you guys because I love this story.
Oh my goodness.
And now this, the last straw. The only remaining thing I had over Andy was that I'd written a few books. I introduced myself to people at parties as James Duthie. Anchor, author. They smile uncomfortably, pretend to need a drink, and scurry away. All Andy had was the anchor part. That's all she had was the anchor part. I would remind her this every time I texted her. Hey, A, nice work on that interview with McDavid. There's a great chapter on him in Beauties, the book I authored. Like I wrote it myself. It was a lot of words. Now that's gone too. Because freaking Petrillo has written a really entertaining, inspiring, and important book about following your dreams, breaking down barriers, and the changing landscape of sports and sports broadcasting. Oh, and also falling in love with a giant soccer goalkeeper. I'm a sucker for the romantic parts. So yeah, Andy's an anchor author now too. I should loathe her for doing this to me, but the problem is that my nemesis is also my good friend. Tell me about James Duthie.
I love James. I love him. I love him. Like what you see on air is who he is in life. He's funny. He's down to earth and he's very caring. And he took me under his wing immediately. Wow. And in fact, when I made the jump from MLSE to Hockey Night in Canada, oh, the woes of our industry, right? Right, always changing hands. And everyone knew that CBC, Hockey Night in Canada, had 3 years remaining on the deal. Yeah. And they kind of knew it was coming to an end. As we know, Sportsnet eventually took over. And a lot of people were saying to me, don't make the move. It's going to be over in 3 years. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is like such an amazing, like, what is going on here? Why is everyone? Because, you know, people sometimes when you're so in the industry,
yes,
maybe sometimes you can lose sight of the bigger picture of how incredible this can be. And you're just so in the nitty gritty of survival mode. So I called James and I said, what am I supposed to do? This is incredible. And yet I have so many people telling me this is probably going to be the worst decision if I take this job. And he's the one who said, you take it. Mm-hmm. Because in 3 years, you're going to show the world what you're made of.
Totally.
And you're going to gain every experience you can and you're going to enjoy it, but you're going to show people what you're made of. And he goes, and so what? If they do lose the rights in 3 years, you've established yourself.
Totally.
And someone else probably will come and get you. Don't worry. Those were just what I needed to hear was take advantage of every opportunity that comes your way. And so, throughout the years, he continues to be a soundboard for me. And I'll call him and say, what do you think about this? Or what do you think about that? And he's truly amazing.
That's a great forward. I have to tell you, that is one of the best. You spent many years at TSN. We've talked a bit about it briefly. TSN years, fabulous, right?
They were incredible. That is where I hosted a radio show, right? Also the first woman to have a daily sports radio show in Canada. And that was about 10 years into my career. So being able to once again say yes to radio, which is a completely different beast from TV, TSN gave me that experience. So I'll always be grateful for that.
And it goes on and on. You have to read, but the road to the Olympic Games, which you co-hosted with veteran sportscaster Scott Russell, who, of course, was at CBC for 40 years, that happened. And you just talked about first ever woman in Canada to have her own daily sports talk radio show. And you did that for 5 years. And that's amazing. And then you joined the analysis team for One Soccer in 2019. Then in April 2024, your birthday month, April 9th, right? It's your birthday?
Yeah, that's it.
Canada NHL broadcast Rogers reached an agreement with Amazon Prime Video to exclusively stream a package of NHL Monday Night Games in Canada for 2024-25 and 2025-26 regular season from its own NHL and Sportsnet broadcast to Amazon Prime Video. And I have to tell you all, this was very significant because it expanded the league's presence on streaming television. And you and Adnan Virk would co-host the pregame, the intermissions postgame. I just think this is very, very exciting because this is another trailblazing moment for you. Not only were you breaking barriers for women in sports, but you're once again at the forefront of innovation, helping bring hockey into the streaming age for a whole new generation of fans. Was that a real thrill for you? Because I find that really very cool.
It's amazing. When I look back, I think I'm like, okay, so I started off in cable television,
yes,
moved to digital,
yeah,
with Leafs TV and, yeah, and those were all digital. Yeah. Then to network TV,
the highest CBC,
the which highest was the, high.
The
yeah.
mecca of all, yeah.
Doing it all, network yeah. for the longest time.
Yeah.
Then joined One Soccer, which was a streaming app, to then Amazon Prime. And so I've been a part of also the changing viewing habits
yes.
of people.
Yes.
And I've witnessed it. Like I'm at the forefront of it. And even though every time there's change, it's human nature, there is a resistance. I also know that TV/streaming or, you know, whatever, content, we'll call it content.
Yes.
Content goes where the viewers are. They have to, because yeah. where the viewers are is where the money is to be made.
Totally.
So as much as there's still a little bit of a fork in the road and change and resistance, and I know that, you know, it can anger some people, because trust me, I'm a consumer too. I have to subscribe to things as well. I also know that that is where the viewers are going. That is where the habits are now. So I see it. Like, it's pretty amazing to see the changes as well in this industry and how that affects the way you produce something, how that affects the way you sell something, how that affects the platform that it's on.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much our world, this industry in particular, is changing because of that.
And you're still young, Andy. Like, I'm much older than you. I have to tell you, I'll tell you after. But yeah. I mean, you've done all this and you're quite young. So it's really exciting to imagine what's to come. Speaking of thrills, you have 3 Canadian Screen Awards. Congratulations on that. You're the first woman ever to win for Best Sports Host. Wow. The first woman to win back-to-back, the first women to own 3. What was it like getting that first Canadian Screen Award for Best Sports Host like? Because that's, I know those award shows, and that yeah. must have been really awesome.
Oh, it was surreal. Like, even when I got up, my husband was with me. And, you know, I grabbed his hand to be like, yay, we did it. His hands were so sweaty. He was so nervous on my behalf. And because that actually was on International Women's Day as well, which was very special.
Oh,
yeah,
I love that.
I won that on International Women's Day.
You really started a lot of this. It's amazing. I know that Robin Herman was one of the first female sports writers who made history when she became one of the first women ever allowed into an NHL locker room after a professional game. And I think it's pretty cool that you were allowed into the Leafs dressing room to do interviews after the game. And I know that Don Cherry was against this initially. You had a bit of a face-off.
Don, you know, so I do have a chapter on Don. And I know some people may like it, may not like it. I just stuck to my experience with Don. And yes, I share the time where I was there for one of his many controversies, but I was there for when he came out and said women shouldn't be in the room. And it was after a player had some sort of, you know, an altercation. I wouldn't even call it an altercation, but it was some sort of, you know, back and forth with a female reporter. So it prompted this discourse. And then Don Cherry, of course, had his say on Coach's Corner. And I remember immediately after that Coach's Corner, he came up to me and said, this is kind of what I meant to say. And I just want you to know that I completely respect women in the industry. In fact, I was one of the first NHL coaches to allow a woman in the room. And he was referring to Robin. Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, Don, like, I get it. Maybe you didn't say it the way you should have said it, but yeah. like, okay. So, you know, we kind of had it, a really good conversation the following week. He came up to me again and wanted to continue talking about it. So I really appreciated that about him. Don always treated me with respect.
Yes.
Always had a soft spot for me. Always wanted me to have my time on hockey night in Canada.
Yeah, it's fascinating to read. And you also make a very powerful observation in the book that men are often given the benefit of the doubt while women are expected to prove themselves over and over again. I love the line in your book that a guy in sports is seen as an investment, and for a woman in sports, a woman is seen as a risk.
So a lot of the topics that I choose in my book, I chose these topics because whenever I do speaking engagements, this is what women are asking me about. This is yeah. what, and especially young aspiring journalists. So to your point, I have stuff in there, sexism. I have stuff in there, ageism,
yeah.
body image, how to deal with social media, the way women are attacked.
Yes.
versus
yes.
the way men are attacked on social media. And
yes.
yeah, like, it's so true. The ageism part, where a man who's got white hair and wrinkles is seen as somebody with experience, you must listen to him.
Totally.
Whereas a woman, we are haggard.
Right.
And it's time to go. And it's
right.
time to be replaced.
Right.
And that is so frustrating. And even right down to about, you know, being given the benefit of the doubt, there are men out there who will make a mistake, whether, you know, they meant to say 23 goals.
Right, right.
You know, but they actually said 24.
Right.
People will go, oh, we know what he meant. We know what he meant.
Yeah, yeah.
But if a woman messes up the stats, it's she shouldn't be in sports.
Right, right.
And a friend of mine who ran one of the local radio stations there for sports said the same thing. He goes, whenever my guys messed up, nobody said boo. Right. But if my female reporter messed up, he goes, my phone lines would light up with complaints.
Yeah.
And so that's just really unfortunate where people, you know, they don't even realize, like maybe some people do realize they're doing it and some don't even realize they're doing it. And it's like, I want to call it out.
Yeah.
Bring it to the forefront so people can recognize it.
Okay. I'm going to mention some of the incredible legends you've interviewed, Murph, and I know we're almost out of time, but I'm going to ask you just to say like a few words or a sentence. Johnny Bauer.
So kind and warm. Yeah. Love him.
Gentleman.
Soft-hearted. Yeah.
Bobby Orr.
Funny. he's so funny and great storyteller.
Nice. Billie Jean King. That's a great story. Oh, in the book.
Inspiring and in a good way, because sometimes it can have a negative connotation, but I mean like, oh, I don't even know if I want to say the word, but like intimidating in the sense that you just want to be better around her. That's what it is. When she comes around, I want to be better for her.
So Andy, guess what Nancy said about you? Andy makes everyone, I'm getting the chills now. Andy wants to make everyone better. Andy's presence makes everyone want to rise to the occasion because she's such a star and such a good person inside and out. Beautiful person inside and out. She really said that. She went on in an epic poem about you and how you do exactly that. So I love that. That's lovely.
That's the greatest compliment.
Donovan Bailey.
Okay. Donovan Bailey, high energy and knowledgeable. And he's an alpha that makes you want to like run through a wall too for him. You know, I mean, as all sprinters are. So energy.
Great story in the book about that. Brian McFarlane.
Oh my goodness. He is the audio to my love of sports. He, you know, whenever I think of an incredible moment in sports, it's his voice that I hear because he can tell it in a way that gives you chills and that also makes you feel nostalgic and just makes you feel cozy.
Nice. Brian Williams.
I mean, the godfather of the Olympics, an inspiration and someone I wanted to be.
Yeah. And he's the one, by the way, who worked with Arthur Smith.
That's incredible.
Yeah. Scott Russell.
Best friend. So emotional and cares so much about and I kind of feel bad saying amateur athlete. There's no such thing anymore. But the high performance athlete who maybe only gets the recognition once every 4 years. Hmm. He truly is an advocate for them. And he's a, you know, encyclopedic knowledge of high performance sport. And he was the one who taught me that you want to mention where they're from, their family members, because they get that spotlight once every 4 years and it takes a village. So he always wants to credit everyone in their life who helped them get to that point. He taught me that.
Nice.
Yeah, the broader picture.
We talked about him already, but just briefly, Ron McLean.
I mean, to me, he's so funny. He's hilarious. But he also was the one that, as much as he'll give a little bit of advice, he encourages me to find my own footing. Find my own identity. And I love when he gives historical references. And I've definitely incorporated that in my life when he'll say, hey, this is what's happening now. Remember when this happened 20 years ago? And now we're kind of having this like comparison or full circle moment. I look at that and I go, that's a great way to storytell as well and to put things in context for people. So I've learned that from him.
Nice. I said earlier, there's so many fun sports stories in the book and we don't have time for all of them, but having a tooth yanked in the Leafs dressing room. I must have killed.
It hurt like crazy. But again, as I mentioned in the book, I still had a post-game show to do. So all I said to the dentist was, don't get blood on my blouse.
See, that's TV, right? That's our visit. For young women entering sports media today, quick advice that you would give them?
Trust in your own abilities. Trust yourself. And, you know, there are so many people in this industry, despite still some of the roadblocks that are there. That's also just part of what makes an industry fun to overcome them. There are so many people willing to help and who are in your corner. So as long as you trust in your abilities and you have the right mentor, you're going to make it.
You're going to make it. I love that. There's a question we ask everyone at the end of the show. And of course, we're going to ask it to you. What is bliss for Andy Petrillo?
Bliss is my family. is, you know, being with them. Oftentimes it's being at home, even just with my husband, my dogs, because yes. It doesn't matter if a show went well or it went poorly. It just doesn't matter what else is going outside these four walls. We will always laugh and just be at peace with one another. Lovely. In our home together.
Lovely. What more could you ever ask for? Yeah. I have to tell you, Andy Petrillo, it's really been an honor to have you on the show today. And you have gotten me interested in learning more about sports, really.
Good. I'm happy. Yeah,
you're amazing. You're amazing. I really enjoyed this. And I want to thank you very much for being on the show. How can people contact you and connect with you on social media?
I probably check my Instagram more so than I do Twitter or X. So Instagram would probably be the best way to do that. And yeah, I love being able to interact with people. And a lot of people reach out to and ask advice. And a lot of students also reach out to see if there, you know, any questions that they have. So I always welcome that. Instagram's the best way to do that.
That's awesome. Well, thank you again. Each week, we spotlight a fabulous person like Andy Petrillo. This happens sometimes, right? Who's living their bliss, and definitely go and get her book. It's phenomenal, and I recommend it highly. And you can follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would like to thank our wonderful guest, Andy Petrillo, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kiley, producer Lori Quinn, audio engineer Juliana Yannuziello, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center. And as well, thanks to Garrett Flores for the beautiful pink rose that adorn our set each week. For everyone here, I'm Judy Lee Brack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.